You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 61 of Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. My guest today is Megha, and we are going to talk about your daughter's Hirschsprung's journey. Now, I will shock everybody to start with and say that you had Anya 6 weeks ago. So fair play for you for coming onto the podcast. Thank you so much for coming. I'm also joined by Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast co-founder Louisa. Welcome to you both and welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much, Tom.
No problem at all. Thank you for coming on. As we mentioned, you had your baby 6 weeks ago. Would you like to take us back that short amount of time to when Anya was born?
Yeah, sure. So as you can imagine, 6 weeks ago, still very raw and fresh. And like right now, my world is just everything to do with Hirschsprung's. It's like all I'm sort of reading about, hearing about, listening. And your podcast has been one of those things which I've just been listening to, like sort of continuously, to just go through all the episodes and hear people's stories. But so with my journey, I had Anya on 5th of December 2024. I've already got a son who I had in the UK, in London. And Anya is born in Sydney because that's where I live now. And when I had my son, I had him like through the NHS. It was a completely different experience. It wasn't the best experience. So me and my husband were like, you know, we want to have one more child. We're going to do it really nicely. We're going to go private, and we're going to just, you know, do the full work. So had, you know, by the grace of God, had a really smooth pregnancy, scans, everything fine. No health complications throughout, nothing to indicate that anything was going on behind the scenes, as you could say. I had an elective C-section, went in, had the baby, you know, the care was great. I had like an obstetrician throughout. So she was with me throughout the whole journey. And then, you know, Anya was born and she latched on straight away when she came out. We had a first feed. She'd done exceptionally well, which was like the complete opposite to with my son. So I was like, oh my gosh, she's going to be amazing. Like she's going to be a pro at like feeding. So everything was just like complete bliss at that point. And then we went up to our room, just got settled, just adjusting to sort of having, you know, this new beautiful baby in our life. And then it just, as the hours started going on, we were just like, something's just, you know, we're not sure. Like she just wasn't interested in feeding anymore. And it was just really sort of confusing as to what had changed, you know, all of a sudden. But then we spoke to the midwives, and the midwives like, oh, you had a C-section, the baby's very mucousy, so she's just probably not interested, she just needs to get that mucus out of her and then she'll start feeding again straight away. Then they started doing all her obs, you know, like blood sugars, all of that, everything was just coming back absolutely fine. Then I remember looking out for meconium. Like meconium was such a big thing, because with my son, the meconium came out in my waters, so I had to go for an emergency C-section. So with him, it was a completely opposite experience. Meconium meant that I had to get rushed in for a C-section. And whereas with Anya, it was like, where is the meconium? Like, what's going on? And it was in the back of my mind, like a sort of a 12 hours had passed. And I was like, something, you know, just started to feel off, because I was like, why has she not passed meconium? And then, Anya, forgive me in the future if you ever listen to this, she's just a little bit hairy. So I mentioned to the midwives, I was like, oh, you know, has she done a poo or anything that you've like observed? And she's like, because the midwives were like changing the nappies and taking care of everything. Like it was, you know, they were amazing. And they were like cleaning her nappy, and then a little bit of hair was starting to come out. She's like, oh, this looks like meconium to me. So I was like, oh, what a relief. So I was starting to relax, but then I was like, that doesn't look like that. Started looking just like hair to me. So I was like, I'm not too sure. And then they have an amazing facility, which is like a night nursery where they take the baby so that you can rest, and they bring the baby back for feeds. So the next midwife who was taking care of Anya, I brought her back sort of, you know, a few hours later. I was like, oh, has she done a poo yet? And she's like, yeah, the previous midwife said that she was cleaning a nappy, and then there was, you know, bits of like hair or meconium or whatever. So I kind of just put it in the back of my mind. I was like, oh, okay, I feel like that they think that she has done a poo, so we're good. Then again, she just wasn't feeding, just wasn't interested, just was very lethargic. And then one of the midwives, like on another shift, then this is like on the Saturday, so 2 days later by this point, I just started speaking about her first bowel movement. And the midwife was like, did you see it yourself? And I was like, no, but it's marked on the sheet that she had a dirty nappy. So I'm assuming that, you know, maybe on those couple of hours when she was in the nursery while the midwives were taking care of her, that she'd done it. So there was actually a lot of sort of misalignment between the midwives. So then I was like, no, I haven't seen. And that's when my heart started to drop, because I was like, then I started to Google, what does it mean if your baby hasn't passed meconium? And Hirschsprung's came up, and I was like, I clicked on it, and then again, I started reading, and I was like, oh my gosh. But I was like, this is only 1 in 5,000. I was like, surely we can't be a statistic. I was like, you never expect that you're going to be that one. So I was putting it to the back of my mind. And my sister-in-law is a GP. So I started raising it to her, and you could see that she was starting to look a little bit sort of concerned, but was trying not to, like, she was like, look, I don't think it's that. It could be this. It could be this. And then we were just trying to go through all the options. And I was still just trying to remain calm. So then the pediatricians were involved, and they were like, okay, she hasn't passed meconium, so we're going to now see like if we can do something. So they manually extracted it from her. So we thought, okay, it's come up. Maybe it just got stuck and she just needed a bit of assistance. And then they took her up to the special care nursery. And the next morning, me and my husband went up to see Anya, because they said, look, we're gonna observe her for the night and see what she... And then as soon as I walked in, the midwives were like, oh, she pooed overnight by herself. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I started crying. I was like so happy, like over the moon. And then they're like, yeah, you can go sit down with her and feed her, and then you can take her back down to your room. But then as I went to pick her up, I noticed the bilious vomit around her. And they took an aspirate from her stomach, and it was just all bile, and it just looked really off. And I was just like, this just does not look right to me. So they immediately called the doctor. My obstetrician, she had come up at that point, and I showed her a picture of it, and you could see she looked a bit sort of like, you could just see everyone's faces, and then I could overhear the nurses talking and saying, oh, we think that baby's got Hirschsprung's disease. And I'm like, what is Hirschsprung's? Like, I was trying not to read too much into it, because I knew I would just get really anxious sort of going into that rabbit hole. And I was like, I'm not going to read into things unless I need to. So the obstetrician then came and, the pediatrician, he came back to our room, and me and my husband were sitting there, and he just said, look, this is really concerning. And I just thought, okay, it's concerning. They're just going to keep her in the hospital I delivered at for a little bit longer. And he's like, I've actually called for the emergency transfer service for kids to take Anya to a specialist hospital. And then I was like, oh, okay, like, is this, you know, just like a checkup thing? And he was like, no, this is pretty urgent. And I was like, when does she have to go? And he was like, I've called them already, and they should be here anytime soon. And that's when everything just started to sort of like cave in, and I was just like, what does this mean, all of this? And then he was just like, she needs to just go for a further checkup and see what's going on. And at this point, I'm 4 days past my delivery C-section as well, and I hadn't been discharged from the hospital And then as like we're just sort of in the room trying to process everything, I get a call saying, okay, the emergency transfer service is here. Do you want to come up and say bye to Anya? And as I go upstairs again, they're like, she's in this like huge incubator thing. She's being strapped up. The ambulance team is all there. It looks pretty terrifying because you're just like, what the hell is going on, you know? And I was breaking down. And then they were just like, okay, someone has to go with her. So my husband went with her. And then I was like, okay, I need to get to this hospital as well. So, you know, that all ended up happening. They turned the sirens on. They took her away. And I was like, this just feels so wrong. Like, I was just like, my baby is being taken away from me. It was heartbreaking. It was just probably just one of the worst parts of like feeling of the unknown and what was to come. And then she got transferred to a children's special hospital where we've been at since then. So it's been over a month and we're still here. Then she got transferred to NICU and they ran all their tests and biopsies and, you know, part of me was still just hoping, like, I really just hope that this is not something like that, because you go onto the groups and sometimes some of the stuff you read can be a little bit negative as well. So still just hoping, still just waiting. And then her initial biopsy results came back and they were just like, yeah, it's Hirschsprung's disease. But they're like, but, you know, she's feeding, like, she was still feeding great. She was still after washouts, like pooing really well. So they were like, we suspect that she's got short segment Hirschsprung's disease. And I was reading again that, you know, the more sort of severe types of Hirschsprung's disease are more the genetic side of things. Whereas if it's a random one, you're more likely to have short segments. So I was like, no one in my side of the family or my husband's side of the family have it. So I was like, surely it will be just, you know, we'll be in the 80 to 85% at least. It will be short segment. She'll have a pull through and we get to go home. So by all her behaviors and the way she was doing great. We went in with that expectation. And then luckily the surgeon who was, you know, doing her pull through surgery, he's like the main person in the hospital who does, you know, Hirschsprung's related surgery. So we're like, great, we've got an excellent surgeon. We had a chat with him and he was like, okay, we're going to do it next week. So I was like, great, let's just get this done. We'll be home before Christmas, you know, perfect. So surgery day comes. We, you know, mentally prepare. Again, it's not easy knowing that your child, that, you know, they go through everything about they're going to have to go under anesthesia and this and that and all the potential complications. So, you know, surgery day comes. She goes in. My sisters had flown out from London to come support me as well, because it was just really hard because being here, like, even though I have like my husband and his family, but just having your sisters just to give you that strength and support and just get you through those days of the waiting was really helpful. So we all just, you know, getting ready for the day. The day came. It was a long sort of 8-9 hours. We get the call that she's come out of surgery and we're like, yes, you know, everything's going to be great. We're going to, you know, we're just going to get on with that life, you know, that newborn life now, and, you know, get home to my three, like nearly 3-year-old son. And then they take us into a room and the surgeon sat down and he was like, there were a few surprises. And that's just when I knew, like, oh my gosh. So he was like, first of all, it was supposed to be just a straightforward pull through, but that's what we had, you know, thought it was going to be. And he was just like, we went in and her whole large intestine was collapsed, which basically meant that she's total colonic, basically. And then he said there was also a part of her small intestine also impacted as well. And then he said she also had a bowel perforation. So they had to sort of open her up and fix that all up. And then he was like, you know, so she's come out with a stoma bag. And that was just kind of the main gist of the, and then after that I just went numb. Like I could not process anything that he was saying. I just went absolutely numb. Like my world just, like, it just went completely still for me. And luckily, my sisters were there, so they were asking all the questions. They processed it as much as I was shocked that it was for them. They, you know, especially my older sister, she was amazing. She asked all the questions. And then afterwards, the surgeon, he could see my face and he's like, I'll give you a bit of time and then I'll come back. So he came back sort of half an hour later. And in that time, I was just like, I just can't believe it. Like, I just cannot believe it because of she just did not display any of those signs that she was so severely impacted by this. And, you know, then it was all the stuff of like she has to sort of stay in hospital until she grows. We have to monitor all of these different things. And it was just like all of this information all of a sudden to process. It was just a huge shock. It was just a huge, huge shock. And yeah, so we've just been sort of, you know, we were expecting to go home on Christmas Day and it's, you know, it's coming up to mid-Jan and we're still here. you know, then even after that, we just kept going through so many different hurdles because then she got like an infection, like a bacterial infection where she had to be on antibiotics for 2 weeks. Then they said that they had to test her to see if she had meningitis. So they had to do like a lumbar puncture from her spine. That was on Christmas Day. And it was just horrible. It was just like one thing after another, like this test, that test, and just constantly just trying to go in on the in the morning and being really positive to then being told, okay, we think that she's got X, Y, Z. We need to test and do a blood test. We need to do a kidney ultrasound. We need to do this. And you're just like, can just someone give us a break?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. Yep. That is an incredible story. Is there anything you want to jump in with Louisa or?
I don't really know where to begin.
Now you know how I feel every week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
I guess, like, just how strong, like, you must have been. Obviously, you're not must have been, you are being. You know, obviously, your daughter, Anya, she's being really strong and she's being incredible and doing amazing. Oh, she's literally amazing. And sending love to her, but sending love to you and your husband and your family as well. Because that is just, as you say, when you kind of set your expectations of, yes, it's frightening, but it's going to be okay. You know, a few weeks and it's all going to be okay. And then it's, I guess, when the surgeon sat you down, as you say, and you went numb, and then infection and so on and so forth. And it happened over Christmas as well. I guess it just makes it even worse. So how did you kind of, where did you get your information from on Hirschsprung's? Was it support groups? Was it online, like Google? Was it surgeons?
It's just a mixture of everything. I think it was initially just, first of all, just accepting and processing what is Hirschsprung's. Okay, and this is what my daughter has. And then it was just, you get just so consumed in that world of what's available online. The hospital, great. They gave me some good like booklets and leaflets and information sheets. And then I went, I think I relied a lot on sort of just information online. And I actually just recently ordered a book from Amazon, which is about Hirschsprung's, the missing puzzle piece or something like that, which is quite an interesting book. It's got like a lot of factual information. And then I think there were a lot of days and nights where I just consumed myself in people's experiences of, you know, Hirschsprung's and what they've dealt with. And then I posted just something on one of the groups about what my daughter's diagnosis is and if anyone had anything similar. And this lady reached out to me and was just absolutely amazing. And that's one thing I have to say, like, the amount of mums that I've actually now connected with online through Instagram and Facebook has been amazing. Like, even I created a new Instagram account, and even just the amount of people who have messaged and just said, you can reach out to me and ask me anything. We're this many years into our journey. Feel free to ask any questions. And just actually just trying to focus more on positive experiences and stories. So one of the ladies was the first person that I spoke to in so much detail. And she told me that her son also had similar sort of affected area as my daughter, and was absolutely amazing. And that gave me so much hope that, you know what, this is not all doom and gloom. Like, she can and will have a perfectly healthy, normal life. Like, yes, it's going to be a few hurdles that we may need to cross. But, you know, it's not impossible and we will get there. And just focusing on those positive stories, I think, has really just given me a lot of hope. And that's what I try to do. I'm trying not to sort of get consumed on the negative side of things. I think, like, everyone's journey in Hirschsprung's, I think, feels quite unique and different. And she has to go on her own journey. And I can only sort of really focus on that and not get too consumed by other. Like, it's helpful to hear, but not get too down on that.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're right when you say about a community, because I think there's so many, and I've met so many people in the last year or so that are so positive and have been through. And look, I mean, there's negative sides that we know as well, and we don't sort of shy away from that. And there's lots of people who post, you know, ups and downs and all sorts. But the general feel and vibe that I get from the groups I'm in and the people I talk to, and maybe it's just the people I interact with, is that they are so positive. And I mean, people who've been listening to each episode will probably know the people that I'm talking about, and you probably talked to quite a few of them as well. Mm. But they're so positive and so kind of, you know, yes, you've had this enormous shock happen to you, especially if it's not, you know, like me, like Louisa, especially if it's not in your family to begin with. It's a heck of a shock, I can imagine. Only sort of what my parents have said to me, and I imagine Louisa, what your parents have said to you, that it is, you go through an awful lot within 3 days, 4 days, a week. But that strength of community, I guess, can be incredibly helpful at what is undoubtedly an incredibly difficult time.
Exactly. And then you sort of also realize, like, to me, I know they say 1 in 5,000 babies, but it feels like there's actually so many people that I've just found and, like, seen and everything. And I'm just like, is it really that rare? Is it as rare as we think? Like, I don't know. And then I also found it very interesting that they say that it's more likely in boys and girls, because I just see as equally amount of girls as well as boys who are diagnosed with Hirschsprung. So, yeah, it's a really mysterious thing.
Very much. I mean, I did, I think it was a few weeks ago, I did a sort of quick calculation on the people I've interviewed, how many either are females with Hirschsprung's or have daughters with Hirschsprung's, and how many are males. And I think it comes out at sort of, I think, about 65% female. I don't know whether that's just because females are more willing to talk about Hirschsprung's or what. I don't know, but it's something in the region. The last bit of research that I saw, I think it's three out of every four people born with Hirschsprung's are male. And I think that came from a leaflet from Reach, which again seems extraordinary just based on the amount of females that I know, that we know, with Hirschsprung's. It's Yeah, I'd love to see if there's ever an updated paper, if anybody can tell me, or why it's so prevalent in boys.
Yeah, I do think that there's going to be a lot more focus and interest on this. I don't know, maybe I'm saying that because I'm really interested in the topic now. But I think maybe just more and more people are able to share their experiences and stories, or even just that it's becoming more diagnosed now compared to what it was, say, many, many years ago, which is all very interesting. It will just be so interesting to see how the Hirschsprung space changes in the years to come.
I think so. I think so, most definitely. There was one or a couple of parts of your story that I'll pick up on, and one that I think so many parents, including my own parents, can relate to, when your daughter is being taken to hospital.
Yeah.
And just that sort of numb feeling of having that. I think there are so many parents that I've spoken to that can sort of fully relate to that.
It's the most terrifying thing you can ever go through, because, you know, you're recovering from just giving birth. You have all these hopes and expectations of what that newborn period is going to look like. And just that level of vulnerability and just being able to surrender to these people who you've never met, who are just taking your child away from you, basically. Not knowing when, you know, like at that point, I was just like, where is she even going? Because like Sydney is still very, you know, all new to me. I've only been living here for more than over a year now. So just a different system, just a different country, all of those things, and just feeling so helpless as well in that moment, because I was like, there's just nothing that I can do right now. And, you know, my job as her mother is to protect her and to look after her and shield her from anything, you know. Yeah. And at that point, there was just nothing I could do. There was literally nothing that I could do. And that was the same feeling I had when she went in for her surgery, that I was like, there is nothing I can do in this situation. As much as I don't want her to go through any of this, I have to just do what's best for her. And that is for her to go for all of these things, like the surgery and being taken to the specialist hospital in that moment. It brings back a lot of like pain and emotion, because it just still feels like yesterday that it all happened.
Yeah, well, it kind of is. It is. I mean, you know, I'm sure you're aware, of listening to, you know, a few episodes, I do speak to a lot of parents when their children are maybe sort of 2, 5, 10, you know, and they've almost had a few years to process what they've been through. And you definitely haven't yet.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I'm still very much at the beginning of my journey on this adventure, I'd like to say. Like right now, there is still so much that we need to sort of get through and work on before we can get to go home, which is the hardest part, because no one can give us a clear answer as to sort of when we'll be able to go home, because it's all dependent on how well she does with reintroducing like full feeds again of milk and how well she grows and gaining weight. There's just so many different factors, and no one can just say, okay, you'll go home in 2 weeks or 3 weeks or a month or 2 months. It's just so unknown, which I think makes it even harder. It's not like a condition where you can just say, okay, you've had, you know, a C-section, for example, you get to go home in 5 days. It's not like that. It's very different.
or take some antibiotics and then go home in 2 weeks or whatever. It doesn't for anybody who's very new to Hirschsprungs, it don't work like that. Unfortunately, it would be lovely if it did. We just took a couple of tablets and then away we went. But it doesn't work like that, unfortunately. One thing as well that I did pick up, because you said your daughter was feeding straight away,
yep.
Which, again, having total colonic Hirschsprungs, but feeding straight away, that from what I hear from other people, that sounds incredibly rare. Did the nurses and doctors, I guess, possibly think that it was short segment Hirschsprungs because she was feeding straight away, or did they sort of explain that to you?
It was just like they were saying, just with her general behavior, because once she got transferred to the specialist hospital, they done like a few washouts and then her stomach sort of went down. She didn't have any more like bilious vomits or anything. So they're like, yeah, okay, she can go back to feeding. And again, before we went into surgery, she was feeding amazingly well, and then she was doing really well with the washouts. So that's why it was just like, oh, this is most likely just a short segment thing. And, you know, you'll be home in a few days after surgery. Nobody, like literally so many of the nurses, the doctors, everyone were just really surprised. They were really all just taken aback when she come out of surgery and they told us what they found.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. And I think, I know you said before about being 1 in 5,000 and how rare that is. And then I think the last thing is then you want to end up being more rare and then being in the, I think total colonic, am I right in saying about 5%?
Yeah.
So from things that I've read, I mean, I wouldn't quote me on that, but yeah.
It's around that. That's what I thought as well, because I was just like, because you go through different stages. You one, accept that, okay, fine, it's Hirschsprungs. Then you're just like, okay, it's probably just a mild version of it because, you know, she was doing so well. There's no family history. There was just nothing to indicate that it was something more like serious. I still, even today, to this day, just feel really surprised us like how she's, and even now, because she's got the stoma and now she needs to heal from her surgery and just adjust to sort of her new sort of working intestines. Like she's really hungry. Like she's, and I'm just like, but she can't have full feeds at the moment. So that's, I think, a really painful thing is just seeing her crying, wanting food and being so hungry. And I was like, you don't look like someone who has, you know, total colonic Hirschsprungs. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
No, but that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, you know, if you were to line up a load of people in a line and say, which one has Hirschsprungs, you wouldn't be able to tell. And I guess in a way that is... that's a really good thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, what do people with Hirschsprungs look like? Well, they look like Ian, Louisa and lots of other people. You know, it doesn't mean, and sort of, I guess, going on into the future, it doesn't mean that people are going to look differently at you. Or they're going to say, oh, well, that person clearly has Hirschsprungs. A, nobody knows what Hirschsprungs is in the first place. So they won't say that. And B, just look like a regular person, I guess.
And that's so interesting you mentioned that, because a lot of the time when, you know, people would look at her, or I've like shared like photos with any like friends or family, they're like, but she looks normal. Like she looks, you know, she looks fine. And I'm like, yes, she is, because she is normal, you know, and that's why she looks that way. And it's kind of just a bit sort of, it's a new thing for just everyone to like understand and, sort of get their heads around to sort of like what it is. And, you know, even like to me, I'm still learning every day sort of what Hirschsprungs is and, you know, everything that's associated with it. And from what I can, like what I've seen and what I've heard, like you do end up living an absolutely normal life. So, yeah.
I mean, it's one of those conditions where I think you alluded to it earlier on when everybody's story is different, which I guess is kind of good from my point of view. Otherwise, I'd run out after one episode if everyone's story was exactly the same. So it's good that everybody's story is different. But it's not. And I think that's where, again, going back to that community, it's about being careful when people do post things and they've experienced something with their child, that they don't make like a generalization of it and say, oh, just because it happened to me, this will happen to you, and then X, Y, and Z will happen and blah, blah, blah. Because it is, as I suppose you're in that stage at the moment, taking one day at a time.
Yes, exactly.
And that kind of, you know, this has happened now, this is the way we're going to deal with it. Now this has happened, or this, rather than sort of getting ahead and saying, well, this might happen, or this is definitely going to happen.
It's so easy to catastrophize. And when you're so new to something like this, you automatically you do start assuming the worst, and you're just like, okay, is that going to happen to my child as well? Is this going to happen to my child too? And I have really just made a conscious effort to be like, I'm not going to dwell too much into, like, you know, everyone has their experiences, and, you know, I'm sure we'll have ours too as well, but you can't fixate too much on that, because I think it just won't serve you, especially at a time like this right now, where you're just, like you said, taking one day at a time, you're going on your own journey. And I think that's what sometimes you just need to sort of focus on as well when you're at a time like this.
Most definitely. Yeah. Go on, Louisa. Yeah, feel free.
I absolutely love that you refer to it as an adventure, because that's what it is.
Yes.
And for any parents who are new to it, it is an adventure. It's going to have ups and downs, and I'm sure there's going to be times that you get lost, but you'll find your way again. So I guess to any new parents who are in your situation, what's kind of the best advice that you'd give, who are 6 weeks post birth, still recovering themselves and trying to process it? What would you say?
I think one of the most key things is just, like I said, to remember that every journey is going to be so different on this. And that's one thing that I keep trying to remind myself as well. It's just like, just because someone else has had a certain experience doesn't necessarily mean that we all have that experience. Like, we need to just figure that out on our own. And two, just being conscious of the information that you are consuming and reading as well. So I spoke to one of the surgical team of doctors today, and she even said to me, she's like, it's great that you're doing all your research and things. She's like, but if there are things that come up, she was like, just check it with us. And I was like, that's actually a really good point, because a lot of people just like to sort of take something that they read and think that this is what it means, but it doesn't necessarily mean that. And it's just like, just soundboarding it with a reliable source, which would be the surgical team that's going to treat your child, for example. I think that's a good way to sort of give yourself peace of mind, because they are the ones that are also going to be going on this journey with you, and they'll be best placed to advise whether that's actually right or not, or more suitable to say our scenario where it's like a certain type of Hirschsprungs, and whereas someone else's might be a different type of. So I think just being very conscious of that. And three, I would just, as easy as it may sound, but it's just reminding yourself that you're strong and you can get through this, and that you will find that strength and power for your child to get through this. And that's something that I really struggled with in the initial week, because I was like, I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do this. But then I was like, if I can't do this, then how am I going to give the strength and the courage and everything that my daughter needs right now to get through this? Like, she's the one that's actually going through it. It's not even me. And, you know, when you decide to become a parent, you accept that you're going to be a parent regardless of the good days or the bad days. And we're just having a bit of a blip at the moment. And, you know, the good days are to come. And that's my job, and that's what I'm there to do for her. So I just every day, even if something isn't going to plan or it's not a great day, or, you know, I do still have those moments where I'm just like, why my daughter? Like, why? And, you know, it's so unfair and this and everything. But I just feel like I need to pick myself up for her. And I would just say that just remind yourself that you need to give strength to your child. And my surgeon actually made a really good point as well. He said, like, the mother's energy and vibration goes to the child as well. And that has really stuck in my mind since he said that to me. I was just like, if I'm going to sit here crying all the time and, you know, feeling sad and, you know, what am, like, I'm not serving her in any way that she needs me to right now. And I need to be strong for her.
Absolutely. A few points that you made there. So one of them was soundboarding it with your surgical team. Because there's so many different ways that Hirschsprung's is treated around the globe. Soundboarding it. But also, as you say, just especially as a mother, just having that, digging deep and finding that positive energy. Tom, do you have anything to...
I think just as we sort of get towards the end here, in terms of the near future for your daughter, I know you mentioned a little bit about sort of wait. It's a lot of waiting around. But in terms of the near future, where do you see her care going?
So I think the sort of, for what I can see for the next few months, is just getting her sort of off. So she's on TPN at the moment, and we've slowly started introducing like milk feeds. So it's just making sure that she's able to tolerate feeding without the TPN. And then hopefully we get to go home and we just sort of monitor her weight and growth and everything during that period. And then we'll just have to, again, like, it's just a waiting game, just constantly reassessing it with the team over here at the hospital as to when they think that she's ready for the next surgery. So it's all on her. It's all dependent on her and how she does. And, you know, one of those sayings of like, take it day by day, I found it so frustrating in the beginning when sometimes doctors will say that, but I'm just like, I literally have to take it day by day. I have no other choice, and I just have to focus on sort of now and the present and how we're going to get through today, and then sort of just have some things to look forward to. So just looking forward to having her home, for her to spend some time like with her brother, just to get big and strong before she goes in for her next surgery.
Fantastic. I think taking it day by day, I think for a lot of us, we'd rather go 5 years into the future and just know what's going to happen, but that's unfortunately, until time travel exists, that's impossible. But I just wanted to say thank you so, so much for joining us. As we mentioned, you are 6 weeks post giving birth. So enormous props to you for coming on. And thank you so, so much for sharing your story. And we wish you, your daughter, and the rest of your family all the very, very best in the future.
So much. It's great. So you'll be able to see sort of Anya's journey. I'm trying to document it as much as I can whenever I have some time and space to be able to do that. So, you know, fingers crossed. And, you know, we really appreciate all the good wishes from everyone. And let's just see how it goes, taking it day by day.
Fantastic. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprung's Podcast, or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprung's_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll bring you another episode soon.